Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Man City and Liverpool take their medicine and a manager in London gets his P45. Oh, no, no. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Monday, the 1st of November. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Welcome along, ladies and gentlemen, to a comprehensive ramble review of the Premier League weekend with Luke Moore and Jim Campbell.
Hi.
Hello, boys.
Can't promise it'll be comprehensive.
No.
Probably quite a lot of ill-thought-out rants and opinions from me, and whatever else happens, happens.
Probably a bit of snark from me.
Yeah, Jim will probably just chip in, have a pop.
Well, look, I think the ramble curse has officially been lifted. We're doing quite well because just before we started recording, it's been officially announced that Nuno Espirito Santo has been sacked as the Spurs boss after that 3-0 defeat at home to Manchester United on Saturday night. A spooky weekend for Spurs.
And look, what was spooky about it?
Well,
just frightening.
It was terrible, wasn't
it?
Yeah, it
was.
Not a single shot on target at home, and now Nuno has been sacked. We heard rumblings of this yesterday, didn't we, Jim? That Daniel Levy and the board were having discussions about Nuno's future. 10 Premier League games in charge.
I'm astonished.
17 in total. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I can't believe it's happened this fast. Like, they essentially haven't given him the time to kind of get his feet under the table and actually kind of get his style in place. I mean, maybe it's one of those things where it's actually just like when it started, everyone involved was like, we've made a huge mistake here. This is obviously a really, really terrible fit. It's not going to work. Might as well just, you know, activate the ejector seat now.
Yeah.
It must be that, because otherwise it just looks completely mad. And I guess it comes from the fact that, you know, everyone wondered, like, what's this going to be like when everyone knows he's nowhere near their kind of first choice? He knows that. The club are kind of obvious about it. The fans know it. The players know it. So it was kind of doomed to fail from the start. I'm just amazed it's failed this quickly. It's annoying, to be honest. I wanted it to fail for longer.
Well, you had your North London derby fun.
Yeah. But I was hoping I'd get another one.
I feel like Nuno was in a bit of a lose-lose situation from the start, though, Luke, wasn't he? I mean, they don't... Spurs fans, the whole reason they got rid of Mourinho in the first place is because they didn't want this style of football. Mm. And guess what? Nuno plays that exact same style of football. It was never going to please the fans unless they went on a winning streak. You know, at the start of the season, he won 3 games in a row, not forgetting he was Premier League Manager of the Month in August. It was all going quite well in terms of results. But even then, the Spurs fans were a bit like, yeah, but the football's not great. Yeah, we've not conceded, but we've only scored 1 goal in each of those games. You know what I mean?
Well, he's basically nullified and blunted the attacking ability of the entire team.
Yeah.
with no upshot on the defensive side. Remember on last week, Jules, you and I were on, and we were talking about Brighton and saying if you pair up the defensive side and the attacking side of Brighton across a couple of seasons, they'd be fourth in the league or whatever. And we were saying, well, that getting that balance is absolutely really difficult though. So that's part of the reason why Brighton haven't been able to do that. Spurs have got both sides really badly wrong and taken away any kind of pattern of play going forward. And also not sorted out the defence. They've not become more robust either. But, you know, listen.
Their numbers are actually relegation numbers so far this season. Why are you kicking me?
I just kicked you twice. Do you know what this? I kicked you and I tried to stop kicking you and I kicked you again.
So the second kick was like an apology for the first one.
It was. Sorry about that.
But their numbers are terrible, Luke. You're right. Yeah. Both defensively and attacking wise.
I think they're great. You're looking at this wrong. This is exactly what the number you want from Spurs.
In terms of attack and prowess, they sit alongside Norwich by several measures, you know, and that's not a place you want to be. And, you know.
Sorry, I'm realising the scale of what I've lost here.
and Nuno's the announcement saying Nuno was leaving the club on the Spurs website today is three sentences, which probably tells you everything you need to know. And they managed to include a quote from Paratici and the names of all the other coaching staff in that as well. So look, I don't think he's going to live long in the memory. The problem is, he was never the guy, as you've already said, Jules, he was never the guy they wanted, and everyone knew that. So you've got to feel a little bit sorry for him, really, because you come in, it's publicised that they had a completely farcical search for a new manager after Mourinho. And, you know, it's very hard if you're on a two-year deal, as we mentioned before, with a one-year break and all this stuff is reported, and that you're not the person that the club wanted in the first place to get anything going. And what's transpired ever since is that everything on the pitch has reflected that. So one thing I would say is this, you know, Mourinho got away with a lot because he's Jose Mourinho, obviously, but also because for a large part of the turgid stuff they were turning out under him, there were no fans in the stadium.
Mm.
So it was kind of, I think it probably would have come to a head a lot earlier had there been fans in the stadium. And also when they were putting in like really bad performances as well, I remember being at one at home to Leipzig in the Champions League. The point was that was in the Champions League, right? So at least they had Champions League football at the stadium. For me, it all comes back to Levy not backing Pochettino in 2018 or whenever it was. I think it was 2018. That all sows the seeds of what's happening now. He spent ages, Levy, building Spurs up into a size of a club that could hire Jose Mourinho. And what they got was a toxic version of Jose Mourinho with none of the success that comes alongside it. And I think the farcical search for a new manager after Mourinho fatally undermined Nuno from the start. And I think really, and I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that Levy, all things being equal, I think he should have by rights be offering his resignation. I think he's been abysmal in the last 3 years. I think he's delivered them the stadium. He's got them to a level of commercial enterprise that they wanted. And he's been good at doing that. On the football side, for the last three and a bit years, he's been absolutely horrific. And if all was right in the world, he'd be tendering his resignation, in my opinion. Because it's very hard to see how they get up and compete again at the very top end with Levy doing the thing he normally does, which is either appointing a football director like he has this time with Paratici and not being able to resist interfering and making shit decisions over the top of him, or not having a sporting director and deciding to do it all himself and being shit at it. So he's not able to stay out of the way. He's not able to construct the stuff he's good at. And he's made poor decisions. The last 3 years have been not good enough. And all things being right in the world, this won't fucking happen, by the way, but all things being equal, he should be off.
Mm. I think another thing that's really, really done for Nuno as well is that for whatever reason, obviously Harry Kane's form, that's so integral to Spurs. And I think Son and Kane papered over a lot of the cracks that Mourinho created. And the moment that stops functioning, that they just become very, very average and pretty easy to play against.
But that takes you back to the Nuno point again. If you inherit in a situation where Harry Kane, as a new manager at a club, you need the authority. Mm. You need to have some authority, some experience under your belt of dealing with top level players.
Couldn't have been a worse start, could
exactly.
it? Like, I still haven't spoken to him. All that undermined him.
He's
like
got
immediately.
No, he had no chance of being able to sort that out. And I think you're right. I think you've tapped into something there. The only things they have been able to do, Spurs, when they started off with those three wins at the start of the season, a little bit lucky here and there, I think. Son was doing a lot of the Son and Kane were doing a lot of the work. Kane obviously didn't score any goals and missed the start of the season. But when they did do something, it felt to me like it was more a running beyond someone or beating a man or Son doing the same. And there's no real pattern of play going forward, as I said at the start. And the Kane thing's been a disaster from start to finish for hit under his tenure, I think.
But that's interesting now, isn't it? There's talk of Antonio Conte coming in. We don't know how likely that is to be because obviously the news is quite fresh. But I wonder, does that re-energise Harry Kane? I think like selling Harry Kane a Spurs project is easier than it would be for someone who doesn't have the ties to the club that Kane has. So that might make him think, oh, we've got a manager like Conte coming in. I know we've been burned like this with Mourinho before, but maybe actually this will be a chance for another cycle. I'll see out my contract, start talking to my brother again.
It speaks to a larger issue about what clubs do when they actually appoint managers now. I've said before, I think there's nothing wrong with Spurs trying to become almost like a turbocharged Leicester. So you get a manager in, it's a project. A manager like Rodgers would be ideal, and you could probably make inroads. It's not a massive stretch to say. I mean, it is at the moment because of the way Spurs are, and they're in absolute disarray, and we don't know at time of recording who they're going to hire. Fourth place in the Premier League is probably up for grabs.
Well, this is the thing, Luke. I think in the interest of balance, if we actually look at where Spurs are in the table at the time that Nuno Espirito Santo's been sacked, they're eighth, but they're actually only 2 points off fifth place, where Manchester United and Arsenal sit tied on 17 points. And such is the nature of this up and down Premier League season that if you actually look at the teams above that, you look at Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City. Now, realistically, are Tottenham going to catch Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City this season?
No.
So the best that Tottenham can really hope for is fourth place. But right now, would you say that there's a manager that can come in that can achieve fourth place when you look at how well West Ham are doing this season, when you look at potentially the players that Manchester United have got? And yes, we know that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United as a club have gone through all sorts of pressure and all sorts of problems already this season. But when you look at the players they have, that squad is better than Tottenham's. Mm. Then you look at the rise of Arsenal and how well they've been playing recently.
And they've got no Europe either.
And they have no European football as a distraction. And then Leicester have underperformed so far this season. You'd probably put them above Tottenham come the end of the season, perhaps, or roughly around the same area. So really, is it that bad? Is there going to be a manager that can really come in and change things so drastically, so quickly? Or should they have stuck with Nuno and just gone, you know what? Okay, it's not the style of football we want, but maybe if we stick with this for a little bit longer, might work.
I think he's fatally undermined from the very start for the reasons Jim said. I don't think there's any chance at all. I broadly agree with the decision, but I think, it goes back to that old adage. If you're the person making these decisions and you keep making them wrongly, where's the accountability? That's why Levy is in the firing line, or should be in the firing line, in my opinion, because of the consistent ways over the last 3 years he's made these poor decisions. I agree with you. I think fourth is up for grabs. I do. But
are Tottenham in the running for fourth?
I think if they get Conte in, I think they are. If you look at some of the body language of some of those players, Harry Kane's, I know Hugo Lloris is the captain. Harry Kane is a big, big figure there. Mm. And for him to, his body language yesterday was terrible. For him to perform the way he has been performing, because ultimately he's sulking. And we don't like to hear this because he's the England captain and because he's a good player and because his goal scoring record consistently has been brilliant. He's fucking sulking. Like, get over it. Understand it. He is. He doesn't want to be there, right? And you can make all the excuses in the world. Is he going to get away with that under Conte? Well, if he does behave like that, he won't play and Conte won't care. And so that automatically is an improvement. But I think with Nuno, it was very difficult for him to manage these difficult situations because he hasn't got the experience or the authority, because he was offered a 2-year deal. He was seventh choice, apparently, and no one respected him. Mm. So if no one respects you, they're not going to do what you say, are they? It's as simple as that, I think.
And isn't that a shame for Nuno as well? Like, that's one of the things that's getting overlooked a little bit here, I think, because his reputation, let's say 2 seasons ago, you absolutely would have put him like, oh, maybe he was someone who could go and do a job at a club like Spurs. That seems like a logical next step.
They talked
now
about him for the Arsenal job at the time, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Like, proper, like, snakes and ladders stuff. Like, his reputation is, like, just, it has fallen so far now. It'd be so interesting to see what he does next. I feel really sorry for him, I have to say.
Yeah. I do as well. I think the difficulty with Antonio Conte coming in there is that he's going to want to build this squad and he's going to want the money. Yeah. And it's as we keep going back to, will Daniel Levy give him that money? Going back to the actual performance itself and the reaction that the players gave after, I thought Emil Højbjerg, his post-match interview was really interesting because he basically said, he had to stop himself from calling some players out. Who do you reckon he was going to chuck under the bus, Luke?
It's difficult to say because there's obviously a hierarchy in the dressing room. I think Højbjerg is the kind of guy that doesn't take any shit at all, and I don't think he would have spared anyone.
I'm surprised that he stopped himself then.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think yeah, it was almost a very revealing interview, which would have been great. But sadly, these days you don't really get that much of that from kind of currently playing players. But you know, the way United set up against Spurs was interesting because when I saw that, I thought that's perfect for them. That's a great way of freshening things up, gives you a bit of extra protection. You know, Emerson Royal at right back, still finding his feet. Ben Davies isn't really good enough anymore, hasn't got the legs. So that's a great boost to the wing back areas for Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who's trying to find some form, and the same with Luke Shaw, and they played quite well. Extra protection in midfield. Cavani will run for you all day, give Ronaldo the support he needs. But regardless of anything that happened, you know, if you're not going to be right on the edge and working really hard, you're not going to win in the Premier League. We've seen that time and time again. So really, on one side of the fence, the Man United change of formation was interesting. On the other hand, it didn't really make much difference because Spurs were so poor.
Do you reckon the nail in the coffin, really, Jim, for Nuno in terms of his time at Spurs was the fact that they lost 3-0 to a United side who have actually been pretty turgid this season.
Well, I mean, this time last week, the narrative was essentially exactly the same against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
So like losing to getting pumped essentially by a team and a manager under that much pressure puts your own situation into such a stark focus. And again, that's quite indicative of how far Man United have fallen. I know like losing 3-0 at home to anyone isn't ideal, but like that's one of the fixtures in the past where you would have sort of excused it a little bit at least. Mm. But yeah, it's just a constant pressure cooker, isn't it? It's just like pass the parcel of this like horrific managerial pressure, and I think that genuinely has played a big part in this. Like you can't be getting dicked on by another crisis club. It's actually passing it on.
That's it.
I think there's a lot of criticism, isn't there, that in coverage of football that people focus too much on individual games, but the patterns are there with Spurs. I mean, we talked about some of the attacking stats that they don't have. You know, they haven't mustered a shot on target for like three halves of football now.
Yeah.
So. You know, I do think you really need to be right on your game. And I think going into this game, the build up for Spurs would have been: look at United; they're on their knees here. Mm. Look at how well they can be exploited. Look at how much they can be vulnerable. I know Varane came back and they changed the shape, but we're at home in front of 60,000 of our fans, and we've got this amazing stadium. You can just see there was such a lack of reaction that it was very, very difficult to make an argument that the manager was ever going to come back from that.
Yeah. And apparently Antonio Conte is already in London. So we'll have to wait and see what happens
He's
there.
He's just having an autumnal walk through Green Park, doing a bit of shopping, I expect.
Yeah.
But that might be another reason they pulled the trigger, because they probably thought, actually, do you know what? We might miss out on Conte.
Mm.
And Conte is probably the best out-of-work manager in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, get him if you can, because I think, didn't he, hilariously, it was reported that he turned them down last time, so he wasn't interested.
Yeah.
It's funny how much 6 months being out of work can do to change your outlook.
I'm just really glad that Antonio Conte is here and that he could potentially take this job and it won't go to Graham Potter.
Well, that would be, yeah, exactly.
Unless Conte turns them down again.
We'll come on to Brighton and their brilliant point at Anfield a bit later. But let's just talk a little bit more about what happened this weekend and some of the other matches. It was a really bizarre weekend in the Premier League. 7 away wins, which is actually the most in a match week so far this season. And probably the biggest surprise of all of them was Crystal Palace winning at the Etihad in Pep's 200th Premier League game in charge.
Disrespectful.
They spoiled the party, didn't they?
Disrespectful, that.
Yeah. It looked like he didn't understand at the end, didn't it, Pep?
Yeah. I've heard this can happen. But I never thought it would happen to me.
they had a bit of a mare as well, because they were down to 10 men. Laporte was sent off, which, I mean, some people are arguing it shouldn't have been a sending off. But I actually think Crystal Palace deserve credit more than anything. And it's hard for me to sit here and say that, but they were really good. And I think you know what? They've been brilliant this season under Patrick Vieira. And I think there have been plenty of matches, including the one against Brighton earlier in the campaign, where they deserved to win and they didn't get the points. I think leading into this game, they'd drawn 4 games in a row and it almost felt like finally they got the win that they deserved out of the performance.
Win.
And they've been unlucky this season, but in this game, they actually had to create their luck, and I think they deserve the win.
Yeah, I agree with you. And especially, like, you know, to score early and be that organised. Like, going going 1-0 up against City at the Etihad is a weirdly high pressure situation to find yourself in.
You almost don't want to be in that situation.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because it's like, all right, now we're going to get
right at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. Or ideally do that as well.
Yeah.
As they did. But you're inviting all kinds of pressure, and Vieira's got them so organised so quickly. And yeah, he deserves a huge amount of credit. The turnover they had from the squad at the start of the season and coming off the back of a manager who's been there a while, there tends to quite often be a little bit of a hangover there. They've been burned before with Frank de Boer as well in a kind of a similar type of appointment. Just really, really impressed by them.
I think what's worked in their favour as well, you make a good point there, is the massive rebuild that they had to have this summer. They got rid of a lot of their experienced older heads in the squad, brought in a lot of young players, new players, new manager. It felt like it was almost set up to, not to fail, but I think everyone was kind of expecting them not to have played the good football they've played. And I know they're in the bottom half of the table, but I think they could finish top half if they continue in this vein of form. And I think that possibly because the expectations were quite low, maybe that's why they've surprised us all.
Yeah, it felt like at the start of the season, it felt like, oh, this could go either way.
This could go badly, yeah. I thought, yeah.
And I thought they're an absolute credit to themselves. I know they were playing, they played half the game with an extra man, but let's not forget they scored the goal, first goal before that. Mm-hmm. And last week we were talking about how poor the application was from Man United. We've just talked about how poor the application was from Spurs. The application from Palace, every time I've seen them this season so far, has been brilliant. Like, they haven't quite got the results that they deserved, as you guys have said. I just think referee Andre Marin has got a lot to answer for, because if you are going to pull someone up for denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity just as Kyle Walker's about to put the afterburners on,
yeah,
then we're all missing out there, aren't we?
You're an enemy of football.
Yeah, because Kyle's not going to get a chance to stick those afterburners on and bail someone out, which is one of the most electrifying moves in sports entertainment.
Brilliant.
So that was a bit of a shame. But I thought they were excellent. I thought Conor Gallagher was obviously just standout good. He looks to me to be genuinely like a very, very exciting player. I mean, he's made the step over to Palace and playing at the Etihad in the way he did. And actually, his performances all this season have been amazing. He's a very, very special talent. We should be excited, very, very excited what he can achieve. It kind of reminds me a bit of what, I know they're slightly different players, but it reminds me a bit of what we saw with Mason Mount, where he just steps up and steps up and steps up. And before you know it, really, you wake up one morning and he's one of the first names on the England team sheet, to go from where he went very quickly. And Conor can do the same, I think. I think he's an amazing player. He was a standout performer in this game. And that is hard to do, even if Man City are down to 10 men, because I think that's the first goals they've conceded at home in the league this season.
Yeah, it was the first one.
That tells you its own story. So I thought they were absolutely fantastic, and a credit to the manager. And as I said last week, you can see what they're working on. Even if they don't win a game, you can see what they're working on all week. They're just such a tight unit. They're so kind of well drilled. And I think that's a credit to Vieira to be able to get his ideas across so efficiently, so quickly.
Yeah, and that puts City level on points with West Ham now, who won. They beat Aston Villa by 4-1, which means West Ham just cementing their place in that top four. Level on points with the champions. And, you know, I know I've watched a lot of West Ham this season. They just make you smile at the moment.
Yeah.
They play with so much spirit and just the kind of like team ethic, you can almost feel it through your TV screen.
Absolute nightmare to play against.
Did you see the interview, Ben Johnson and Declan Rice, at the end of the game as well? I just thought, like, they're just so cute together as well. Just the smiles on their faces. Just lovely to see, Jim.
Yeah. And I mean, they've very quietly gone about putting a really, really good squad together there as well. I mean, obviously, we all know how good Declan Rice is, and they've really benefited from the fact they've managed to hold on to him. But like Saïd Benrahma's starting to come into his own as well. It's just like there's such an impressive group of players in there. Mikel Antonio, obviously, just doing what he does for them so efficiently has been... I mean, it's the consistency with them, isn't it? It's the consistency without their squad, the way they've managed to play, getting all those players like just pulling in the right direction. David Moyes is very, very good at that when he gets some time. It's like it's like when he had Everton, sort of like when he finished fourth with Everton, didn't he? And like, that's astonishing looking back on it. And it's the same thing. He's been there a while. He's got the control he needs.
They're just really well balanced. They've got like a really good base of midfield of Rice and Suchek. They've got three players behind Antonio who will offer you lots of different types of challenges and take up lots of interest in different positions.
Yeah.
And they're also all of them, if you're talking about Bowen, Fornals and Benrahma, I know Lanzini came on and contributed as well, but those three, they're kind of a bit mercurial. You never really know what they're going to do. I know people will say, well, I know what Jarrod Bowen's going to do. He's going to cut in off the right. Fine. But Bowen's played right up front as well for West Ham this season and been good. So, and the centre-backs have contributed hugely, not just in set-piece dominance, but they've had a couple of goals as well. Ben Johnson, who you mentioned, he's been fantastic. And then you've got the set-piece delivery of Aaron Cresswell as well. He's fantastic. They've got a very, very well-balanced team. If they can manage to juggle all those competitions, yeah, they're going to have a really, really good season.
Yeah, I think what's been most impressive as well with West Ham is everyone probably teed up this season as, well, make sure you keep Mikel Antonio fit, because otherwise without him, where are the goals coming from? Well, they've had 11 different goal scorers this season now, and that's the third best in the league. Mm. They had four different goal scorers yesterday. Mikel Antonio didn't even score, and they beat Villa 4-1. Yes, Villa were down to 10 men, and there was that bizarre incident where there could have been two red cards in the space of 30 seconds. Obviously, Ezri Konsa was the one who suffered and ended up getting sent off. But I was really impressed with West Ham yet again. Yeah. And it was a bizarre weekend, as I've already said. Of the top three, only Chelsea won. We're going to get into their win and Liverpool's draw, plus some bizarre League Two refereeing after the break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I heard Maguire talking during the week. He was like a robot. He was like, apologies to the fans. Like, no emotion behind it.
Great impression.
I didn't feel like I didn't know I needed Roy Keane's Harry Maguire impression, but it was so good.
Yeah, God.
So good. Absolutely loved it. It's Jules, Luke and Jim here with you on today's Football Ramble. Right, let's get to some emails.
Peter's jingle had a good run. We loved it once, but that love's gone. You can get in touch, just email show@footballramble.com.
Nice and medieval, that.
Like it.
Yeah.
Enjoyable. James Langren's been in touch. He says, I believe I'm in with a shot of having made the longest journey anyone has ever undertaken to watch a single football match. Some shout, but we'll see. As a lifelong Leicester City fan and season ticket holder, I made the terrible mistake of moving to Auckland, New Zealand in 2014. Not only did I miss one of the greatest escapes in Premier League history, we then went on to win the bloody title 12 months later. Prior to leaving the UK, I made a promise to myself that I'd always make the effort to fly back for either a European away fixture or a major cup final, thinking that neither was really a possibility. So when the Champions League fixtures for 2016-17 were announced, I earmarked the away game against Porto as the one for me. As the final group game, this ended up being a dead rubber. We played the reserves and got gubbed 5-0. Because of some not-so-creative, economically-challenged planning, I flew via Lisbon to Porto for the game. As such, including the trip to and from Auckland and a whistle-stop tour seeing family and friends in Leicester, the journey totaled 26,500 miles across a trip lasting 5 days end-to-end. Was all this worth it? Probably not, but you live and learn, eh? I mean, that's going to take some beating, isn't it?
That's a long way to go, but I reckon it probably was worth it, James. Because I bet you had a good time. Why not?
Saw your family.
Exactly.
Well, I think it was annoying because he's probably just kicked everyone else's ass in this little competition now. No one else is going to beat that, are they?
Portugal's a nice place.
Unless an astronaut gets in touch and says, oh, I came all the way down, you know, for Grimsby's last game of the season or whatever from the International Space Station. It's probably not going to be beaten now.
I mean, again, even, I mean, how high up is space? I don't know. Like, I don't know how far that is. Like,
it's probably not even that far. Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for that, James.
And also, by the way, James, have a think about your carbon footprint.
Yeah.
COP this weekend, this week. So have a think about that as well. I mean, I know you're not doing it every week, but you know, you're not doing it every week, are you?
If you are, you need to have a word for yourself.
Yeah.
Show@footballramble.com. That's the email address. Get whatever you want in touch to us or tweet at Football Ramble. Also, if you need a problem solving, remember, you can throw it our way for pep talks. We do that every Wednesday. We can answer whatever problems you have. They don't necessarily have to be football related.
It might be Pep's first time actually emailing in himself after the result at the weekend. I mean, he won't be very happy this week.
Oh, he won't. And I wonder how Jurgen Klopp is feeling after their 2-2 draw against Brighton at Anfield on Saturday. They were 2-0 up as well.
They were.
They could have been 3-0 up. They weren't.
No.
But Brighton came back. They managed to rescue a point. I enjoyed it very much. I struggled to concentrate doing my actual job on Saturday afternoon on score because of it. Because as soon as we got back into the game, I thought, hang on a minute.
It was a very Halloween-themed game because Brighton were like Mike Myers. Like, you keep thinking they're dead, but they're not. Keep coming back. Mike Myers without the mask. It was incredible.
What a game.
Incredible comeback.
It was a great game. It was just really exciting. Well, I mean, Liverpool were brilliant in the first, 20 minutes, half an hour. I was very worried. I thought when that third Liverpool goal went in that got disallowed, the one for handball off Mane, I was really panicking at that point. I thought, oh, we've got away with one there. We've got pretty lucky there. And then after that, we were just brilliant.
Didn't Klopp say that was his favourite goal he scored in his whole time there?
The goal that was disallowed is your favourite goal you've ever seen scored. Yeah. What, because we were so shite playing out from the back that Sanchez kicked the ball into Mane and that's your favourite goal?
Mad. I think he's talking about the pressing.
I think he might be trying to do a bit of sarcasm as well.
Maybe.
But you know in the same way that Pep... We talked about Pep saying he'd be unhappy this week. There's a part of Pep that will be happy that Palace played so well.
And they executed
their game plan so well.
Completely.
He'll spare a bit of time for them. And I reckon Pep does a lot of those like retreats that only people who own social media companies do, where they have to go somewhere in their mountains and they can't speak for a week. I reckon Pep does a bit of that. And he does that every week. And this week he'll spare a bit of time for how much he enjoyed watching Conor Gallagher play and how good Palace were. With Klopp, you get the impression that it's a bit of a silver line to the cloud. The game was just so good.
Yeah.
Do you remember he talks a lot about rock and roll football and how he likes the heavy metal football. And the fact that this was so exciting, I think there'll be a little bit of it will just be like, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. That's why I'm in the Premier League.
He also might take a bit of credit because Adam Lallana was one of our best players on the pitch and he'll probably have been like, yeah, he's my boy.
I love it.
He's still my boy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Klopp said that all in the build-up last week. He was going, oh, you know, Adam, it's going to be a big game for Adam. We're looking forward to seeing him. And it's like, that is very nice and very touching. You don't like him that much, do you? Because you let him go.
Yeah, they shook hands when Adam Lallana got substituted in the second half. You could feel the love there.
That's all part of Klopp's kind of
power
thing with Liverpool, though, isn't it? And the fans and just the identity of the club is all about, essentially, you never walk in alone, even when you left the club. So I think that's all part of just why they love him so much and why he's such a good fit there. Mm. Just on Pep, just going back to that briefly, I reckon he has a recurring dream where he's also a football manager, and that plays out in a full season, and he's doing that every night while he's asleep as well.
I think credit to Brighton though, because you know Liverpool have looked. I mean, they haven't lost a game all season, Liverpool, right? We have to, and they ended last season really well as well. So I mean, I know it doesn't work like this, but you put it across, you know, two halves of a season, if you like, and they're in ridiculous form. They've got the best player in the world, and Salah, they're an incredible, well-balanced team. They've won everything, all the rest of it. It wouldn't be unsurprising if Liverpool went very close to not get beaten at all this season.
Yeah.
So they go 2-0 down so early on away from home. It's a credit to Brighton to bounce back the way they did, because I thought they kept their heads up. They worked really hard. They're a credit to their manager. They were good.
I'm just smiling because it was really funny on social media yesterday. Basically, the Brighton admin posted a picture of Cucurella and Salah's in the background. He's sort of hidden away. And it was obviously a joke. They tweeted saying, like, you know, he's kept Salah in his pocket all game.
Yeah.
And just the replies to this tweet were sensational. Just the Liverpool fans could not handle the fact.
Why so
that
sensitive?
They were like, yeah, but he got an assist though. Yeah, yeah, but he got an assist. Yeah, but he's still the best player in the world. Yeah. What's your trophy cabinet looking like? Yeah. Guys, Cucurella was amazing in the game. I thought actually second half Brighton were really good. But can we just mention Enoch Mwepu's first Premier League goal?
Amazing.
Oh my God. It was so surprising that I genuinely, in the moment, I had to watch it about 5 times before I realised that he actually meant it and it wasn't actually a cross, but he definitely meant it.
It was too central
incredible.
For it to be a cross, wasn't it? It didn't make sense. I mean, we touched on this earlier, like outside, but it's one of those finishes that makes football look really easy. Like a goal's huge, you just kick it in it. It's just, you're surprised you don't see it more.
Made you think, oh yeah, that should happen a lot more often.
Yeah, I could probably do that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was brilliant. What a goal from him. And you know what? I think he's got a lot of promise. I think he's still very raw as a talent. I watched him pre-season against Getafe, and Graham Potter actually played him in about 4 different positions in that match pre-season. And I thought, how is he going to use him this season? What's he there to do? I'm still not entirely sure long-term where he's going to be, but perhaps he's being lined up as Bissouma's replacement if Bissouma were to leave.
Right, okay, interesting.
But look, I think from what I've seen of him so far, he's come from Salzburg. We've spent a lot of money on him, and I think there's definitely a talent in there. And if he can score goals like that, then wow, he's some player. And Trossard, just a lovely finish from him. He kind of played in that sort of false nine position. Mope dropped to the bench, which I was quite surprised by, but Graham Potter just continues to do good things.
Yeah, I mean, he was so, so close to being onside for that last one. So I know Mane had a similar one, but like, what a comeback that would have been. That would have been absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's still really, really impressive. I think Trossard's the guy you want in that situation, isn't he? Because he does have that evil prince look, like probably enjoys inflicting pain.
He does indeed. A great point for Brighton, though. Still in the top half of the table. And with Liverpool dropping points and Man City losing, Chelsea were the only side of the top three to actually win this weekend. 3 goals from them, 2 absolute rockets from Reece James. Where has this come from? 4 goals in 5 games from him.
I know. I want Chilwell's been bagging him in as well. It's all about the fullbacks.
Well, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because the fullback position now is so much more like a traditional winger from the past that I wonder if like Tuchel has just finally like been the manager to find a way to get them scoring in the way that a lot of traditional wingers did.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're in the same positions, right, ultimately?
Yeah, because Chelsea played through at the back, didn't they, against Newcastle anyway? So I guess, they have license to move to go forward. I mean, there's scoring goals from fullback, and then there's that, though. I mean, they're both absolutely amazing.
Amazing.
But you know, I mean, what's been forgotten, I think, because of all the stuff that's been going on off the pitch around Newcastle, is that they're in big, big trouble. I mean,
they were terrible.
It looked like they were playing a completely different sport to Chelsea and not in a good way. They've been awful. And it really is, I don't know what the thinking is behind the new ownership, but whatever they're thinking, they need to move fast. Mm. They need to get a manager in quickly and a coaching staff in quickly who knows what they're doing because they need to improve and quick. What is it, 4 points from 10 games or something? It's absolutely scandalous.
Cheeky little bid for Nuno?
I was going to say, Nuno's available. Mm? Nuno's available. Could sort out them out defensively.
I mean, they're lucky that Norwich have been as bad as they've been, that they're not bottom.
Yeah. Oh,
what I mean? Like, they've just been, I mean, they've played, with like 5 at the back. It's almost like Graham Jones thought, right, well, let's just be completely defensive in this game. They just look desperate to get the ball to Alan Saint-Maximin every time, and just nothing really worked for them, and they need to act fast. Obviously, we've got one more match, then we've got the international break. I almost feel like that's probably when Newcastle will appoint a manager, but who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Very brief mention, Jim, because I feel a bit sorry that we're not talking about Arsenal's win at Leicester, because I actually thought it was a really good win. And Ramsdale was sensational again. That save?
Yeah, fantastic. Thoughts? Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I mean, like, it was coming at a nice height for him, but he still did a brilliant job on it. And Thomas Partey's clearance off the line is exactly why he's there, you know, to sort of be that layer of security. I thought they were, they executed the game plan really, really well. They you know, there was no, you kind of always worry a little bit when, if Arsenal go two up, especially away from home, you think, right, well, now you've got to manage this. So, like, just do it professionally and hopefully we'll get over the line. And they did. I think I thought they nullified Leicester really well in the second half when they were throwing everything at it. And I was very impressed.
That's why I think the save was even more impressive, because of the timing of it.
Yeah.
You needed to make that save in that moment. And a very brief shout for Rafinha knocking Bielsa over on the side of the pitch after during Leeds 2-1 win at Norwich.
That was an amazing game, because like everything happened in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. It was terrible. It was awful. It was the worst game I've seen this season. But then we got 3 goals in 5 minutes. Yeah. So happy days.
And then they stopped.
And that was
again.
It. Yeah, and then they were done. Exactly, they were bored. Yeah. Luke, you were at a game this weekend. You were at Craven Cottage. Enjoy it.
I was at Fulham 3, West Brom 0. I did enjoy it, actually. Mitrovic hat trick, absolute masterclass. He is relentless in that division. He's like the Terminator. I mean, he's got 18 goals in 15 games.
That's
now.
Ridiculous. That's crazy. It's a joke.
And the thing was, even against West Brom, who are a big, strong, physical team, and Fulham basically passed them to death. I mean, West Brom had about 5 minutes at the very start of the game, a little spell in the second half when Fulham were comfortable. But other than that, Fulham passed them to death. And Mitrovic didn't really even do that much special. Mm. But Fulham get a penalty quite early on. Mitrovic scores it. Probably wasn't a penalty, but that's not really Mitrovic's fault. Second goal, Snodgrass, short back pass. Yeah. Mitrovic in there scores. You know, third goal, Fulham player, I think it was Harry Wilson, runs down the right, cuts it back on the penalty spot. Mitrovic is there, scores.
Yeah.
The basic things he just does with such relentless efficiency that, I mean, essentially, when you play with Mitrovic in your team now, you're starting with a goal. You're starting a goal up every game, which, you know, tells its own story. And I thought West Brom were physical, experienced, tough. Obviously, they had a man sent off as well, which made it difficult for them. But Fulham passed them off the pitch. They were excellent. It was a good game.
What's the latest on the Craven Cottage swimming pool, please?
So I was in the stand the Putney end. So and when you're facing the pitch, the new stand's on the left. It looked like it was almost finished, the stand, but I couldn't see evidence of a swimming pool. Oh. So I'm afraid I've got no update on that. It was a bit cold for
that.
That's
a bit of a waste.
I know,
can you get some info next time, please?
What was good was a lot of workmen obviously working on that stand. And then they obviously, maybe they've just been told they can have a couple of hours off to watch the game. So they're all there in their hivers and their hives, just watching it. Yeah.
Yes.
Way up back at the back of the stand, really up high.
Ah, nice. Also, something bizarre from the weekend I think is worth telling the story of. Just referees doing referee things. In the Leighton Orient game, which, by the way, they won 5-0 against Hartlepool, the referee, Alan Young, blew for half-time at 45 minutes, forgetting any of the stoppage time. So the fourth official had added 4 minutes and he forgot to play it. So they had their 15-minute break at half-time. He got the players back out onto the field, stayed at the same ends they were first half, ordered them to play the 4 minutes that he forgot to make them play the first half. And then after they played that 4 minutes, made them switch ends and start the second half.
I mean, it's two-bit, isn't it?
What the hell?
It is two-bit, that. It's, I mean, this is League Two. This is like professional football.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this should be happening.
How'd you forget?
I know everyone makes mistakes, but that is a big one. That is a big one, right? I mean, the fans would know what was going on. When I was at Spurs once, there was a VAR check for, I can't quite remember now, but it was for a penalty. And they were checking it while the game was going on, obviously. Mm. But for some bizarre reason, just because it's how the game panned out, the ball didn't go out of play for like 4 minutes.
Right.
And then they called it back for a penalty. And no one in the stand knew what was happening.
Yeah.
No. Because it had been going on for so long, the big screen didn't really make any sense. You probably haven't even got big screens at Brisbane Road.
No.
Maybe you've got one, but I don't know. But there's no way they would be able to communicate that with the fans easily.
Yeah. Well, the fans, because I was on Score on Saturday afternoon when this happened, and there were a couple of Leighton Orient fans who tweeted and they were like, we have no idea what's going on, but the players just come out and played 4 minutes, which we assume was from the first half. So they were sort of telling us the story, because obviously we don't have a reporter at the Leighton Orient games. So we were relying on the fans to tell this story. It was just bizarre.
Yeah.
Just the weirdest thing.
They must have thought they'd forgotten to change ends at first, which would have been weird enough.
That's what I would have thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. That's football for you.
It's a bit Sunday League, isn't it?
Lovely stuff.
Mm. Probably wouldn't even happen at Sunday League. If it happened in Sunday League, you'd be fuming.
Just wouldn't bother. They just wouldn't do it.
Probably wouldn't, no.
And by the way, Jim, you feeling better now? You were a bit poorly last week.
I had a cold last week. Good. I do not have a cold now. Oh. I have a warm, if anything.
Grow up, Jim.
It's actually really nice. It's not very nice, is it? You and your shoulder pads giving out grief.
Yeah. I know. This is a good thing about this, though, Jules. It's a podcast, so people can't see.
Yeah, but we do have cameras in here. That's true. Someone. I'm still sure someone will put it on.
We have to wait half
media.
Hour for you to do your makeup. You know, it's a camera,
isn't it? Yeah, we do. Right, that is all from us. Thanks for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Tomorrow, Pete and Vish are here with Kate Mason. Be good to get her thoughts on Nuno sacking, and possibly by tomorrow there may be a new Tottenham boss. Enjoy that.
Kate will be speaking Italian by this time tomorrow. No question about it.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Abroad in Japan is the Stack podcast that brings you a taste of life in Japan. Recently, Chris Broad was joined by NHK contributor and legendary video game streamer Pete for a chat about his life as a TEFL teacher.
I one time taught a woman who was still pregnant, and I had to teach her stomach.
What?
Yes, and so...
Wait, what?
She came in, 7 months pregnant, and they're like, no, she wants you to just to talk to her stomach. So I was sitting there giving instruction. Very specifically. No. She held her tummy, and she said, I think he's getting it. And I thought, oh dear God.
Just bizarre. Search Abroad in Japan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. New episodes every Wednesday and Sunday.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.